Hello, thanks for downloading the Flaneur podcast. This week we have new music from Winter's Island, review the Wanted 18 at the Human Rights Watch Festival, at the Human Rights Watch Film Festival, and visit Anish Kapoor at the Listen Gallery. We also learn about the Minecraft phenomenon and eat at the new Bunny Chow restaurant in Soho.
You're listening to the Flaneur podcast.
The number of hours devoted to Minecraft by players around the world is huge. Yet I've always thought of it as that boring digging game. Maybe a young expert can change my mind. I met Jacob Orr, a manager at Frostcast, one of the Minecraft servers that seems to bring pleasure to thousands of people.
Hi, my name is Jacob Orr and that's my in-game name.
So explain something about Minecraft to those of us who know nothing about it.
So Minecraft is a game where you can build things. It's like Lego, except you can have endless blocks. I play on a server, which means I can interact with other people across the world, and through this I've made friendships with many new people, and I enjoy socialising through it.
So are you just a player, or are you also involved in managing the game?
On the server I play on, I started being staff, and now I manage all the network. On our network, we have lots of servers which have different game types, such as PvP and building and creative building and things like that. And many people enjoy all of them.
So it's not just building, it's making friendships.
Yeah, making friendships is a key part.
So is Minecraft always played in a friendly atmosphere?
But sometimes people can get agitated with each other if they troll or grief people. So in that case, you have to ban them or take action against them.
So what is trolling and griefing?
Trolling and griefing is where you break someone's stuff or annoy them somehow. Maybe that could be calling them names in chat or by destroying their buildings.
Is there anything you can do about that behaviour?
On Frostcast, we manage this by having a no-swear plugin, which prevents swearing, and by having staff from across the world.
How many staff do you have?
We have 28 staff across the network, and they manage all of our 9 servers, along with myself and the owners.
So how many users do you have altogether?
We have 30,000 unique users.
What's the average age of people who are playing?
Nowadays, the age has kind of gone down a bit. I would say the average age is about 12 on our servers. On our Frostcast community, we have people who are about 15.
And what do they start doing when they give up Minecraft?
When they give up Minecraft, they move to Xbox. They play more hardcore games and they play things with older ratings.
Does Minecraft teach you any other skills?
Well, with Minecraft, I've learned how to do Java. And Minecraft has always also made me want to start my server a few times. And I've tried that and then I've learned HTML and things like that, and now I'm fluent in that, and I'm hoping to set up my own web design business.
Minecraft isn't just a game.
Minecraft is not just a game, it's an experience.
That was Jacob Orr from the Minecraft server Frostcast. Maybe Minecraft isn't just a boring digging game, after all. Although, to be honest, I still haven't downloaded it onto my computer.
I love watching films.
The Wanted 18 was one of the featured films at the recent Human Rights Watch Film Festival in London. It is one of many Israel-Palestine documentaries, but it's probably the only one featuring talking cows. Documentaries about Israel-Palestine aren't usually much fun. It was unexpected to see people taking big boxes of popcorn into the UK premiere at the Curzon Soho. But artist Amir Shamali and co-director Paul Cowan have created a very rare example of an Israeli-Palestine documentary with a dash of humour. The movie features the heavy-handed Israeli military and rock-throwing Palestinians recognisable from countless other films about the region. It has the talking heads and recreations of documentaries in general. But it also has talking cows, animated in jerky stop-motion, with plasticine mouths and ditzy voices. The Wanted 18 tells the true story of Shamali's Palestinian village, Bet Sahor. During the first intifada, the villagers set up a collective farm and started producing milk from 18 cows, to avoid having to buy their milk from Israel. Palestinians aren't natural cow herds. They had to send someone to America to learn how to milk. But the project was successful. The farm became a landmark, and the cows became celebrities, until the Israeli army declared that the farm was an illegal security threat. With flashbacks, interviews, and animated interludes, we see the consequences. The dairy is forced to go underground, the cows hidden around the village, though the image of one cow hanging from a chandelier is almost certainly artistic license. The film details very clearly the difficulty and absurdity of life under occupation for the Palestinians. but its structure makes the story hazy. The cows make a light-hearted focus, but after a while it appears that the Israeli interest is as much to do with the fact that the whole village is refusing to pay taxes. But the cows did affect Israel deeply, to the extent that the Oslo Peace Accord has written into it the disgraceful requirement that Palestinians can only import animals that have been neutered. The Wanted 18 brings attention to an ongoing outrage, telling the story of Beth Sahor like an Ealing comedy of the 50s. These used to pit a group of plucky locals against the authorities, and a tale of villagers hiding cows and illegally delivering milk by ambulance could come straight from one of their scripts. But to realise that this actually happened, whilst the consequences of such civil disobedience could be imprisonment or worse, is shocking. The Wanted 18 tells an unfortunately broadly familiar tale of oppression, but uses more wit than the subject usually receives, and will hopefully help the film get a wider audience.
Sir Anish Kapoor, RA, has caused a stir with his exhibition at the Listen Gallery. This show of new works is claimed by the gallery to be his radical return to painting, the big talking point being the large-scale works representational of twisted flesh. Onlookers whisper the words vulgar and disgusting. I overheard one visitor asking Invigilator how she could bear to be in the same room as the work. Another laments about Kapoor's departure from nice art. Protruding near to 2 feet from the wall, these are not two-dimensional paintings. They are sculptural objects and a clear progression from his Red Wax series. Not particularly a huge departure or radical evolution, and almost certainly not a painting. Up close, these works are a heavy mess of resin, silicon, and pigment, highly textured and deeply coloured, with no suggestion of figurative form. Take a few steps back and the work becomes an undeniable illustration of torn flesh, fat and gristle, although still without figuration. These are not representations of butcher's cuts, they are violent illusions of meat. This is shocking because, firstly, it is far from our supermarket's sterile meat portions that we are used to. It is brutal and fresh-looking, and the fact that people have squeamish reactions to it is credit to the execution of the works. Secondly, these works are made more gut-churning as they are punctuated by other sculptures, soft and smooth and gentle. They provide a strong contrast to the aggressive meat pieces, yet their shapes are still of the body. Kapoor uses pink onyx for the first time in his work, and the result is 2 objectively beautiful sculptures suggestive of intimate human body parts. A further 2 reliefs, in the style of his hugely popular polished metal pieces, sensually shimmer gold and are unquestionably vaginal. Their mirrored image warps and distorts the gallery and reflects the viewers back at themselves. Gruesome meat has been done in art. Rembrandt, Goya, Bacon, Hearst. It shouldn't shock us, but the scale and textures are provocative and affecting. The consequence is an awareness of the body and a consciousness of our psyche's reaction to the different representations of the body. The work can be seen as a portrait of the physical and psychological human. It is an effectively realised concept and makes for an extraordinary exhibition. Flesh and Body Parts is on at the Listen Gallery until 9th of May.
Bunny Chow is a new South African-inspired cafe on Wardour Street in Soho. It seems named to deter passing vegetarians from entering, until you learn that a bunny is not a popular childhood pet, but a type of fast food. Popularised in Durban by the Indian community, a bunny is a small loaf of bread that has been hollowed out and filled with a hot filling. It's impressive-looking food. Served individually in mess tins, there is a definite just-caught-and-cooked-my-own-lunch vibe to the meals, eaten at communal wooden tables in the stripped-down, pale, pun-posted room. Unable to see what is inside the loaf, it is an exciting voyage of discovery down the bunny. There was rice at the base of my piri-piri pork bunny, stuffed with spicy pulled pork and fresh salad. Other possible fillings are the more authentic slow-cooked mutton curry, the Durban, the chakalaka with spicy chicken, and the veggie. For Easter, a special sweet edition with the best name of the lot, the hot cross bunny, is being served. I am told South Africans pick up a bunny and eat it like a sandwich. For those not keen to get covered in sauce, there are plastic knives and forks, but at some point you will probably give in and pick up the remains of the loaf in your fingers. It's like eating stew without cutlery, which is a strange sensation and worth experiencing. Available to eat in, take away or have delivered, Bunny Chow is an exciting new addition to the lunchtime fast food scene in central London. It will probably never overtake fish and chips in your heart, but is a fun alternative to the ubiquitous sarnie. Finally, we have a preview of the vibrant new single from London-based indie electro trio Winter's Island. Out on 6th of April, this is Aries.
Well, I wrote you a song, but you say you want a symphony. I will take the light through the times and the blades to break my soul. But then sadistity aside, and I'm not without you next to me. I will take the front to the line and bring back the night before. Light the fire and let it burn on top of you. Breathe again beneath the flame. I can stand to fight all the time, but I can't seem to take the fall. Electricity aside, this is more than just a life for me. I can put our time on the line and bring back the night before. Light the fire, let it burn on top of you. Breathe again beneath the flame.
Thanks for listening, and thanks to the contributors and presenters Heath Lowndes and Taryn Richardson. You can read more reviews at www.flaneur.london.